One for the driving conditions and for the way people drove was India.
Really?
It was horrendous. And we would run off the road about three times during our period of 3 weeks in India.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. Weekday mornings, 6 till 10. This is Take 5 with Will Batchelor.
City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and it is indeed... Oh, it's Monday, it's 2 o'clock already, I hope you get into the day okay, and it must be time for another Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. It is the show, you know this by now, that invites you to imagine that your house is on fire, but in a nice way, only nice really, because you get yourself out, you get your family out, you even let you get Rover and Tiddles out as well. Every living creature is out of the house, and you just about... have enough time to dash back in and grab five and only five records. Which five would you save? You also get to grab a book and a film and a photograph and an object from the flames as well. But it is the five records that are causing people the most problems. And the man who has gamely volunteered to put himself into that metaphorical situation today is none other than author and playwright, I suppose I call you now, Nicky Ault. How are you doing, Nicky?
Hi, Will. Nice to... yeah, it's lovely outside, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It wasn't this morning, though, was it?
That's why it took so long getting in. I was getting pulled up in town just as I came up the stairs by people who never got nowhere one night in Istanbul tickets.
Is that right?
Kicking off on me, yeah.
For those who don't know, and you probably can't tell because I'm such a professional, Nicky Ault walked into the studio about 25 seconds ago. So, but it's good to see you. And it's an absolute honour because... I loved Brick at the Mersey Tunnels. I watched it, I think, in its first... Was it first for an 06 or 07?
Gosh, it's been on that long now, you know. I'm forgetting, is it? I thought it was 05. No, it's 06, isn't it? Yeah.
I think it was 06.
This is the fourth run now, so it's... Yeah, it's 4 years. This is the fourth year it's actually played, yeah.
And for those who don't know, it's the story of some disgruntled Scousers who get fed up with being looked down upon by those across the water, and they hatch a plan to sort of terrorise the residents of Wirral. And it's, I mean this in the nicest possible way, it's a pantomime, isn't it? It's an adult's pantomime, in a way.
I suppose, in a way, if you'd have seen the original draft, what me and Dave wrote, there was dogs who drank ale in the pubs, and there was Wirral dogs fighting with Scouse dogs, and there was all this going on, so it was even more a panto, but I'd still say it was like a play stroke panto, but there's times when it goes panto-esque, when they, you know, especially when they start ad-libbing and the crowd starts as well.
I suppose that's it, and that's certainly not to be derisory about it. I mean, I loved it, and to be honest, I'm not the world's biggest fan of the theatre. You know, mm-hmm. There's most plays I go to and I'm kind of shifting around in my seat by half time, thinking,
absolutely.
Oh, you know, when can I get to the bar? Whereas that one, it takes you all the way through, and you love it, and it felt like the last time I enjoyed theatre, which was going to pantomime as a kid. You know, you join in with the songs, you laugh, it's got sort of boisterous and bawdy humour in it. It's adult's panto.
Yeah, no, that was the whole idea. I mean, I a lot of people I know would not go into theatre. Mm. They haven't got the attention span. Myself, a lot when I go to watch plays now, I find myself drifting after an hour or so, unless it's really, you know, grips you kind of thing. So it was with that in mind, and it's even like where I've gone on now with One Night in Istanbul is to try and get new people into the theatre. Mm. Brick Up really attempted that, and we use screens and stuff at multimedia events with the recent One Night in Istanbul, and the whole idea is that people are not allowed to drift off,
because yes.
They've got the internet, they've got the TV, there's 160 stations or whatever, and it just never ends. So if you're going to go and make the effort to go into the theatre, it's got to be entertaining first and foremost for me.
And some would say, purists and snobs, dare I say, perhaps even people from the Wirral would say that is an example of theatre dumbing down. What would you say to that?
I'd say that they stole theatre off ordinary people, because, I mean, the theatre originally was as bawdy, it's a lot more bawdy than Brick of the Mersey Tunnels.
Yeah.
I think they were like, they'd end up fighting in the aisles, and if you watch that film, The Gangs of New York, where they have that theatre scene in there,
yeah.
It was really, really bawdy, and I'd like to see people being able to come alive in a theatre, and I think that the lovey element and the snobbery involved in a theatre is what stops a lot of people going. They don't think it's for them.
There's nothing worse, is there? Because, I mean, obviously Shakespeare was classic bawdy theatre, and there's nothing worse now than when, I don't do it anymore, but when I was doing GCSE drama as a kid, you'd turn up to the Birmingham Rep, as it was for me, and they'd say, right, we're going to do a version of Macbeth, but we're not going to wear costume, we're all going to wear a black polo neck, and everyone's going to, you know, do it in one long take or something like that, and you go, oh, no. But your stuff is the opposite. When did you come to theatre? When did you sort of discover it and decide that you wanted to be a writer?
Well, even though, when I was at school, it goes back to my Irish English teacher, who was Mr. MacDonald, who was always telling me to go and take me a degree. I never really listened to him. I was always too busy wanting to gallivant and run about, and I just wanted a job and to earn some money.
Mm.
And it was the one thing I was naturally quite good at school. Yeah, sounds a bit big-headed saying that, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't at all.
Okay, well...
We know you're good at it, don't worry.
Well, okay, I was really good at English, and I should have went probably and gone on to take the degree, but I didn't. I went off and seen a bit of life and that, and worked away in a lot of countries in the world, in South Africa, Australia,
America. What were you doing? What was your job?
Well, in South Africa, I was working as a roofer in Soweto. I was working on a scaffold, builder's labourer. Mainly it was building site jobs. I travelled the world with it, and it was in the 80s when there was, you know, unemployment was quite bad around, so...
Was it good dough, though? I mean, obviously back home there was nothing doing, but was it good dough abroad?
Not really. The main time I earned decent money was Germany, but I think a lot of Liverpool builders who went to Germany were getting good money. But when I went to, like, South Africa, no, it wasn't. It was just for the experience, and I changed jobs. I stayed in Johannesburg for almost 2 years, and I must have had about 12 different jobs, because there was jobs aplenty. Same as I went to Jersey, I was working as a scaffolder's labourer there. Then I was down in London for a while, and I never earned any great money. Mm. It just to keep me out and about. Well, compared to the dough money I was on at the time, it was good. So, but the English thing, going back to the English thing, I always wanted to do it, and I think I've eventually just reached an age where I was always going in and popping into theatres wherever I was. I'd go and watch a play. I'd always be reading books, and my mates would be saying to me, "You've always got a book, or you always want to see a play." And eventually reached an age where I just thought, you know, it's about time I'd done something about it, because I've been threatening to for 15 years.
Did they take the mickey out of you, or was it accepted?
No, totally wasn't accepted. They took the mickey out of me. You know, why am I always carrying a book? Why do I want to bother going in theatres? And in the end, you just realise that some people just don't get it, so you don't try and explain it to them. So the thing I'm trying to do now, I suppose, is get the likes of my mates and the people I always knew, my friends and relations, into a theatre by writing the kind of stuff that I think that they might want to watch.
And you've absolutely succeeded. It couldn't have been too bad for your cause the other week when old Rafa Benitez and Stevie G and Jamie Carragher and was it Sammy Lee as well turned up at the end. Well, they turned up to watch One Night in Istanbul and ended up on the stage at the end.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Were you there that night or?
Yeah, I was there every night because it's quite expensive, The Empire. Mm. We literally never had no previews for that. We literally dropped that show in One Night in Istanbul like a hand grenade. Mm. So it was only getting edited.
Don't mention those around Liverpool players at the moment, not after the news.
Yeah. So we sort of like only tightened everything up as each night developed. So like the opening night was the second rehearsal as such, the second run through. And we were literally all just watching it going, oh.
And surely you could have got a room above the Casa or something to do a kind of rehearsal in, or was it literally the first time you'd all been together on stage or the second?
No, we'd rehearsed for 3 weeks before, but it was the second run through of the whole play. It was just
on
the
stage proper. Yeah.
No, we hadn't had one run through. No, we had no run throughs on the stage, really. It was we had a run through in Liverpool Community College, who backed One Night in Istanbul up all the way, which is brilliant. We did it in conjunction with Liverpool Community College, and what happened was the rehearsal rooms within the college, we had one quick run through, then we got told the stage has been built, we better get down there, and the next day we were in. We never sort of went through it on stage properly at all.
My God, I love that. Well, I tell you what, that's proper seat of the pants stuff. We shall find out a little bit more about that, and also your books as well, because you are a prolific author, and of course Liverpool FC, which is pretty central to your story and your life as well. But first of all, we have the small matter of these five records that you are rescuing from the flames of your metaphorically burning house. And the first one we're going to go for is Saturday's Kids by The Jam, which I guess goes back to what you're saying about being young and wanting to earn money, because it's about kind of working in Woolworths and Tesco's and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it was that typical English, UK mentality of the Saturday's Kids. You know, you work all week, or you even at the time you got your dough money, or you worked all week, and then you get down to the shops to buy yourself some clothes or a record. And I think at the time, singles and LPs as such, it was like, you know, whether you could afford them, and often I'd spend my whole week's wages on a couple of albums, and the Jams were the first ones I remember leaving school and buying.
Well, it's good that you're rescuing them from the flames, and you don't get the whole album, I'm afraid, but you can rescue the single, and the single in this case is Saturday's Kids by The Jam on City Talk 105.9.
Results of the new tea and the light of life. Check out the girls. They
City Talk 105.9, that was The Jam and Saturday's Kids, and I'm sat here at the moment with Nicky Alt, the writer of Brick Up the Mersey Tunnels, One Night in Istanbul, Here We Go, Gathering Cups in May, and many others as well, which we shall talk about soon, as well as the five songs he would rescue from the flames of his burning house. That was the first one, and Nicky, you were just sat there looking at me then as if to say, don't talk over the end of this record, so I didn't.
It's not often that you get a chance to hear such no great songs as that, Will, so well credit to you for battling with the producer here to get this stuff on, because I always wondered, you know, why don't they play songs like that? I mean, that song, now if they reissued that, I think that'd go straight top five.
Yeah, he's a poet, and you were just saying during the song, actually, when we were having a chat, he's an English poet. He sums up what it's like to be English, certainly what it was like to be English in the late 70s.
Yeah, well, there's all mentions of Ford Cortinas and working in Woolworths and, you know, the little time documents, a lot of Paul Weller's early music, and I love that. I love time documents. I like it when people write stuff, and you can go to that and you can think, oh, that's what it was about in them days, I see, yeah, and I think he does that a lot.
We're going to press on with your choices now, because as well as saving five records, we're going to get to the next one shortly, you also get to save a book and a photograph and an object and a film. And the film you've gone for is an absolute belter. I love this. I mean, I always say this, and it sounds like I'm trying to butter my guests up, and I'm not. It's Carlito's Way, the Brian De Palma film starring Al Pacino and Sean Penn. And for those who don't know, well, I'll tell you what, you're the guest, you explain it.
I just think the whole story is fantastic about this so-called rehabilitated drug dealer who comes back on the streets, doesn't want to go back to his bad life that he had. Mm. Everybody else on the streets trying to drag him back into it.
And that's Al Pacino, Carlo Brigante,
yeah. And then there's the up-and-coming little hoodlums in there.
Benny Blanco from the Bronx.
Benny Blanco, yeah. And you've got all his ex hoodies who before he went away into jail are all trying to drag him back into it and say, come on, Carlito, let's get to it. The music, the soundtrack's fantastic. The fact that it's the nightclub, and I think it's just...
It's the age of disco, isn't it?
It's the age of disco, and I think there was a lot of people, you know, taking substances in those nightclubs. But I think they got the soundtrack right. I think they got the look right. I think the whole movie, I must have watched it about five times. There's not many films I can watch that many times, but each time I watch it, after the first sequence, I'm into it and I'm watching it again.
You're right. It is his hoodlum friends who come back and tell him to get back into crime, and yet they mainly fail. And funnily enough, the person who eventually does drag him back into that world most seriously is not a hoodlum at all, but it's the educated lawyer played brilliantly by Sean Penn, Davy Kleinfeld. Mm. And I think the film's worth it alone. You know that tracksuit he wears?
Yeah.
Sean Penn wears at the end when... I don't want to give the ending away. I tell you what, everyone's seen it. Sean Penn's trying to whack a body at the end, isn't he, with a boating hook.
It's violent.
And he's got, not unlike your track, you know, I think he's wearing Adidas as well, isn't he, in the film?
It's one of those 1970s, the Munich Olympics kind of ones, the silky ones. But Sean Penn's brilliant in the film too.
He is.
And I think the way... the trip that he goes on, Sean Penn alone, is worth watching apart from Al Pacino. So all of the elements of that film, you know, there's not often that they get it right, because they make, you know, they do make a heap of bad films as well in the States. But that one, to me, just shines through as a perfect example.
I love gangster films. I would choose probably Goodfellas as my film, and I've had this conversation in my head many times. And I think that most people who like gangster films, they like either Goodfellas or The Godfather. It's like, which do you prefer, Goodfellas or Godfather? It's a bit like if you're into the Beatles, you know, whose side are you on, Lennon or McCartney's? Mm. And Carlito's Way, I think, is the George Harrison sitting quietly in the corner.
Yeah.
But actually, when you take notice of it, being pretty damn good as well.
Absolutely, and even A Bronx Tale, that's another one that sits in the middle, which is not often it's not mentioned that often. Bronx Tale is a good film, but Carlito's Way, for me, when I watched the film, I thought, if I ever write a movie, that's the movie I'd love to write. And I just think, when you look, you mentioned Goodfellas, and the other thing, I think the reason a lot of people like gangster films, me personally, the reason I like them, it's always A to B stories. It's how a guy starts out here and why he wants to get to there. So the journeys that you go on, and it's not just that it's gangster stuff, it's actually people from the streets with nothing who want to get something. Mm. And that's why I always love those stories. For me, that's always the best stories. Why does he want that? How does he go about getting it? And most gangster stories are that.
And of course, the opening line, or the most famous line of Goodfellas, is as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. So there you go. You've got his reason for getting from A to B in more or less the first line of the film. Although it's not the first line of the film. This is going to get very anarchy. The first line of the film is did you hear something, or what the F was that? I think it is. Anyway, well, I'll have to explain that to you during the break, or in fact during the next song, which is by The Beatles. And it is something which I think I'm right in saying that's actually a Harrison penned song as well. So there you go. You must be subconsciously drawn to that. Like you're drawn to the quiet Beatle and Carlito's Way over the other Beatles.
Yeah, it is that, Will. But for something, that song for me, I have to say that when I look at a 3 minute, 4 minute pop song, it's almost perfection. When you listen to something by George Harrison, by The Beatles, it's as close to perfection that you could get in a record for me. I've listened to a hell of a lot of music. Something is virtually unbeatable as a three, four-minute pop single.
It's 3 minutes, 4 seconds, according to this clock, and whoever blasted it now, 3 minutes and 4 seconds of perfection. Certainly according to Nicky Holt, my guest for this hour on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9, it is Something by The Beatles. City Talk 105.9 at home, a great music and great conversation. Nicky Holt is right, that was 3 minutes and 2 seconds of absolute pop perfection, and it was, of course, Something by the Beatles. The second choice of Nicky for this version of Take Five with me, Will Batchelor, the show which invites a different studio guest each day to go through the five records they would save from their burning home. And we've had two already from Nicky. Saturday's Kids by the Jam, Something by the Beatles. Coming up, we have Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, and a classic from the Lars. Stay tuned, this is City Talk 105.9.
Groom Lake, Nevada, Area 51, July 2009. An artifact of unknown, possibly alien origin is transported from its secure location under heavy armed guard to the banks of the Mersey. Closely monitored, this extraterrestrial object has remained under close scrutiny and appears safe. But now...
Face your fear. Alien Wars, terrifying live reality experience. Now on at Spaceport Seacombe. Find out more at spaceport.org.uk. Alien Wars. In Spaceport, no one can hear you scream.
Mersey Travel, official partners of City Talk 105.9.
If you choose to contact City Talk, be aware. Calls are charged at local rate. Text costs 25 pence plus your standard network rate. Emailing the studio is free.
What car do you want next? Whatever type and whatever your budget, pay less at Motor Range. Hundreds of cars, all makes, the best models, the best colours with massive savings. Open till 9 p.m. tonight. Motor Range. Pay less for a better car. At the end of the M57 Switch Island A59 Northway. Call 0151 527 3000.
The right car, the right price.
Click on motorrange.co.uk.
Motor Range.
City Talk Education is the online guide packed with everything a student needs. Check it out now at citytalk.fm/education.
Tell you what, we'll come back to that, shall we? City Talk 105.9, and it is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. Slight technical halt there, but I will sort that out very shortly. It is Take 5, and my guest for this hour is Nicky Holt, the author and playwright. And we were just chatting during the break there. People know you, I think, best, Nicky, for your plays, Brick at the Mersey Tunnel, and more recently than that, One Night in Istanbul. But, of course, you were a book author first.
Yeah. The first book I wrote was Boys from the Mersey. Then I wrote with a number of other writers, Here We Go Gathering Cups of Mayor, drew a load of writers in to write the stories of Liverpool's travels in Europe.
And Boys from the Mersey, that was basically the tale of the Annie Road End crew.
Yeah.
Were you a part of that?
Yeah, or? When I was a young scallywag, yeah.
Well, I mean, because there's a... People who aren't familiar with that genre may sort of think, oh, you know, that's football hooligan literature, that glamorises football hooliganism. How do you answer that? Because I think the Annie Road End crew, they weren't necessarily hooligans, were they? It wasn't about fighting, it was more about fashion and music and a bit of scallywaggery along the way.
Yeah, well, it was more about being fanatical football supporter when you're young and being able to get to a match when you never had a penny. So, I mean, in the end, I was sort of like... banned from most of the boat terminals in England because we were bunking the boats and bunking the trains all over Europe. So it's all about those shenanigans, and there's a load of Liverpool fans like me who've got those tales, and I just decided to put them down, as a lot of other fellas could tell them same stories. But a lot of it was fashion as well. We really wanted to be different at the time, and the fashion story's been well told, but one day I'm going to get down and write that movie. I think Kevin's had a good go, Kevin Sampson with the Way Days.
But
I want to tell the Liverpool version of it, so I think that's coming up soon.
And Kevin Sampson is a mate of yours who, of course, features in Here We Go Gathering Cups in May, which is a selection of authors, local authors, Tony Barrett's among them. You obviously write one yourself, Jegsy Dodd writes one, about your experience of going to each of the seven European Cups, or one of the seven European Cups.
Yeah, it's just the different tales that it undertakes. I mean, you could go a long, long way with that. I mean, you could go and do a Here We Go Gathering Cups in May 2 and do the semi-finals and quarter-finals, because a lot of those crazy trips in Europe, you know, the preliminary rounds and the rounds before, and even the UEFA Cups and stuff that they've won. But I just decided the idea was to get seven different people instead of just listening to me harping on all the time.
Yeah.
And I think everybody loves that book, you know, loves the seven different stories, seven different styles of writing too.
Well, having seen Boys from the Mersey, which of course is a line from an Elvis Costello song, which unfortunately isn't on your list of tracks, but I suppose it would sit quite nicely among them, I thought the photograph you might save from the flames would be you in a pair of, I don't know, Adidas rare tracky top or something like that. Are you still into the fashionable? And what do you remember about the fashion there? What sort of clobber were you wearing?
It was like a lot of the Liverpool kids even today. Now it's to stay that long. It's virtually Adidas everything, and I mean Adidas tops, Adidas training shoes. That was always the way. But I was so big on fashion then. I mean, at times we go abroad to see Liverpool play in a place like FC Zurich, and the whole idea was to come back with these new strap over training shoes that nobody had in England. So I mean, to be that dedicated, you can tell. Yeah, I'm a bit different than that now.
And you still got your Adidas on.
Most of the stuff you can pick up on the high street in Liverpool now. Kids don't have to go out the way to get it.
Yeah.
It was like a real big trek. So if Liverpool drew somebody strange, like Atletico Bilbao or something, you'd be thinking, I wonder what clothes they've got in that place. So there used to be a lot of that. Because we used to have Harold Ian in Liverpool. There was about two or three shops. And that was it. Now there's loads of shops. So
it's a shame, isn't it? Fashion's now put on a plate for people. There used to be a time where you'd go and claim fashion as your own. So you'd get a brand like Fred Perry, which had previously been worn by toffs and tennis players, and then in the sort of mid-70s, I guess it must have been, or even early 70s, you know, kids from council estates started going, actually, we're going to wear that, and it's going to be a fashion item, and then, you know, the bands followed and stuff like that. Whereas nowadays, if you want to be trendy, you go to, I suppose, Topman or something, and you got all the brands and all the different styles laid on for you. It's a shame, isn't it? No one has to create fashion anymore.
Yeah, and then what it is, it isn't your own, because it is laid on a plate, and like you say, we all had our bands we love, like the Jam, the Clash, but they were everybody's. The band that we all loved when we were 16, 17 was Deaf School. They were a Liverpool band who apparently are doing another gig next year, but we all loved Deaf School. We all loved Fred Perry's. And I remember us walking into Euston Station in about 1978, 77, and like 25 of us all with different colour Fred Perry's on, and all the London supporters were like, what's with the Fred Perry's? What's going on here? But a year or two later, they were all wearing them themselves. So, yeah, you start a fashion and it becomes your own. That's how it works. It worked then anyway.
Well, the photo you've got is not you in a pair of rare Adidas strap-overs or anything else. It's of your three kids, which is nice. It shows you've perhaps mellowed a little bit with age. Is it a particular photograph you're going to save from the flames?
Yeah, the one where they're all wearing Adidas.
all your old hand-me-downs.
Yeah. No, it's just, you know, as you say, you get older and wiser and you realise that, you know, the big things in life and the most important things in life are, you know, children, you know, living your life to the fullest. But it's moments like, I suppose, when you have a child, I don't want to sound all shoppy here, but when things like that happen, you realise, you know, there's a lot of bigger stuff going on than what kind of Adidas you're going to get next Saturday at the game. But it's all a grown-up process. But as I say, once the kids have started growing up and they're there now, I mean, they're always asking me about it, and the thing is that, which annoys me in a way, is I can just go to shops with them in Liverpool and buy them. I want to make them, you know, I want to say to them, you've got to go and trek here, or go to Belgium to get them, or Germany or somewhere.
Do you worry that when they, I don't know if they've read the books yet, you know, do you worry that they might follow your example and become scallywags themselves and do some of the naughty stuff that you were getting up to, or do you just think that'll happen eventually with some kids and with some kids it won't?
I think there's no chance of it happening with them, because I think with Big Brother and cameras and everywhere, you can't get away with the stuff we used to get away with. I mean, we used to run around like lunatics. I mean, I used to literally, I'm not proud of it, I'm just saying the fact. I used to bunk the trains and boats literally for 5 to 10 years non-stop, and it would become such a way of life for me. When I go down to London now, I have to go and force myself to buy a ticket, because I think I'm supposed to just walk through those gates. And, you know, everything's different now, so no, if they did the things that I was going to do, to be arrested in like 10 minutes.
But I'm concerned about your moral authority as a father. You know, when you say, listen, you will get back by 10 o'clock tonight, or you have me to answer to, they can just pick up the book and go, hey, you were bunking onto trains into Euston in 1979, don't tell me what to do.
Well, my kids are still really young at the moment, Will, so I've still got that to come, suppose. And you're totally right, it is going to happen to me one day, but when it comes, I'll face up to it. But I can never see them doing the things. I mean, I was sort of like out the house by 14 or 15 and going to Europe to watch Liverpool, and I was going missing for 3 days, and my dad used to batter me when I got home, but it wouldn't stop me because I was just fanatical about football.
Absolutely. Well, you'll have to keep those books under lock and key, and or maybe maybe write some different ones to show to them, telling them what a good lad you were and how you always did what you were told, and you can preserve it that way. The next record, Nicky, you're going to choose in Take 5 on City Talk 105.9 is by Bob Dylan. We had a sneak preview of it a few minutes ago, thanks to my technical inexpertise, and it is Lay Lady Lay. Why have you gone for this one?
Just such a fantastic song. I mean, when I was into a lot of the new wave and punk music when I was younger, somebody introduced me to, an older fella introduced me to some of the early Genesis stuff and Bob Dylan and Neil Young and Crosby, Stills and Nash. And when I heard songs like this, I thought, well, you know, hasn't got to be 100 miles an hour. And Lay Lady is a perfect example of music slowed down, but I mean, it's got a great feeling to it.
It is, and Bob Dylan is a poet as well, like just like Paul Weller, you know, representing the culture he came out of.
Well, I love the full package. Well, what I love is I love it when you get somebody who's the singer, he's the songwriter, it's his song. You know, there's a lot of copycats and tribute bands and stuff today. I also like it when you get the story from the horse's mouth. You know, it's like if somebody tells a football story, I like it to be the guy who's actually involved in it. Mm. I don't like it when it's like done in a journalistic tone, like a lot of football stuff is, or, you know, like you say, these bands today on X Factor. Bob Dylan, people like him, I mean, he's wrote thousands of songs. The fella's a songwriting genius. Whether you like his voice, that's another thing. I mean, his voice can, and I mean, I've seen him live now, and you know, he wants to pack it in. I think now,
It's shot a little bit, isn't it? But then this one was a lot softer. To be fair, it was the softer side of Bob Dylan, a bit like we've just seen the softer side of you. Bob Dylan, Lady Lay on City Talk 105.9. This is Take Five with me, Will Batchelor, and my studio guest for this hour, who is Nicky Ault, the co-author of Brick at the Mersey Tunnels. It's fair to say, along with your mate Dave Kirby. And was One Night in Istanbul, was that your own solo project?
Yeah, absolutely. It was something I always wanted to do. And after Istanbul in 2005, I wrote about half the play. And the reason it got shelved was I struggled to write a comedy when I knew, like, the Shields family were going through abject misery. And I basically shelved it for a couple of years. And about a year and a half ago, I decided to finish it. So I wanted to tell a story of Liverpool in Europe and some of the shenanigans that we got up to. But it's very difficult to condense it down into 2 hours. And the first half tells the story of Liverpool in Europe and some of the stories the older fellas tell. The second half all about ending in Istanbul. So, no, it was something I always wanted to do, and it was an absolute brilliant success. So we're over the moon with that at the moment.
And obviously this current run is completed. You must be planning another one.
They've been asking us. I've actually been in a meeting before I come in here about... they wanted us to bring it back, I think, September, October.
Oh, wow, that's quick, yeah.
Is really quick public demand, because... I think out of a projected 28,000, I think we had 25,000 people in like 9 nights, which is fantastic. And a lot of people told me in the city I wouldn't be able to do the screens, you know, the multimedia events I was talking about before. And because of attention spans, I wanted to have this thing where there's screens, then there's a play, then there's screens, then there's a play. A lot of people doubted it, and when we pulled it off, everybody said to us, I love that. So it's something we'll be wanting to do in the future.
Did it worry you that your play came out almost at the same time, I think a couple of weeks later, than Beating Berlusconi, which is another wry, funny look at a Liverpool fan's experience at a European Cup final, albeit the one that was 2 years later?
No, not really. The guy who brought Beating Berlusconi out, I think it's been heard as a decent play, and I know the actor who's in it, Paul Tuckway, it's a great actor.
He is fantastic.
Really good actor, good musician. And it was a credit crunch recession year. And everybody was saying to us, oh, you don't want to be signed for the Empire, you don't want to be signed. And everybody was doubters everywhere. There was nobody telling us to do it. I think one fella, actually, Andy Williams at Everton Development Trust, he said to me, just go for it. So we thought, sod it, and drew my partners in, Emile Coleman and Frank Bentley at Bang On Top Productions. We went for it, and we were overwhelmed by the success of it. It's been fantastic. They want it back right away now, which is all testament to what we've done.
Well, you know what they say about plays about going to Europe with Liverpool, they're like buses, you know, you wait 4 years for one to come along and then two come along at once. Did you say you were encouraged with your play One Night in Istanbul by the Everton development manager there?
Yeah, that's nothing to do. That's EDT is a small company on Great Ormond Street that is trying to help grow business in the area and stuff. And it's just a guy I know there, Andy Williams, and he was saying to me about going to the Empire. He said, no, you know, for a normal Liverpool lad to get a show on the Empire is an achievement in itself. He said, no, I think you're going to do fantastic. But he was telling me that all the way along, and I really appreciate that Andy did that. But the success that we had, we didn't realise it was worse than Derby tickets the last 4 or 5 days. I had to hide in the changing rooms in the Empire. I was scared of coming out. Okay. Every time I came out, I was getting mobbed.
Getting mobbed for tickets.
Yeah, people just screaming at me, Nicky, ticket. In the end, I switched my phone off and I hid in the changing rooms and never came out.
But why are people so surprised when, you know, a lad from Liverpool, from working class Liverpool like you, writes a good play? Because if you think about it, it's what Jimmy McGovern has been doing for 20 years, and it's what Jimmy McGovern bangs on about, you know, every time he does an interview, God bless him, you know, he wants real voices telling real stories, and it always seems to work. So I don't quite know what the big surprise is all about.
Well, I think a lot of people, ordinary working class people, are put off because there is this sort of, you know, for want of a better statement, it's like a big academic wall that you've got to mount and climb over. And there is a there is sometimes an old boys network involved, and sometimes, you know, I don't want to sound inward or anything, but sometimes your accent doesn't fit, or they think you're not up to the job, or you're not qualified enough. But most of the people who are on the street and who've lived certain lives, merchant seamen, you know, policemen, if you're going to write about the police, it's like that guy, I think, who writes The Wire in the States. I think he was originally, he was a cop himself. It's better to come from the horse's mouth. And I mean, if you're going to do a little bit of training on script writing or whatever, look at a few plays yourself, then they are usually the most qualified people. So, no, you're right what you're saying, Will. Why shouldn't it be a hit? But I didn't think it was going to be the hit that was. Maybe we found a bit of a niche market. So hopefully we'll have another one coming out next year as well.
But what I want to see from you next is a hit that can also be big outside Liverpool, because surely you can apply the same principles to you know, experience generally that doesn't have to be with Liverpool. I mean, obviously, One Night in Istanbul is going to be more popular inside Liverpool than outside it.
But it's not actually. They've actually asked. They want it in Belfast and Dublin already. And
they're just outposts of Liverpool anyway, aren't they?
Okay. Well, also we've been getting quite a few mails in from Asia and Malaysia, where Liverpool are playing now, Thailand, that they'd love to see the show over there. So
okay, I mean. And that's great news, and I'm not knocking that, but that's with Liverpool fans. What I'm saying is, you could write a play about, you know, your experience as a builder abroad, kind of another version of Alfieda's Own Pet or something, that would be universally recognised in Birmingham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Glasgow, wherever you go, you know, whereas, of course, a play about Liverpool FC is always going to be more for Liverpool supporters, I think it's fair to say. And Brick at the Mersey Tunnels is for people who understand the differences between Liverpool and Wirral.
You're right. You're saying the Istanbul thing, though, it is a sort of a universal story, because that one thing about that football match, it was a bit of a JFK football moment. Everybody sort of knows where they were when that game took place. So I thought it was a bit of a universal match. I mean, you could probably... People like in places like Birmingham and London would turn up to watch One Night in Istanbul just because they know that football game. So I don't think it's just tied to Liverpool, but I do get what you're saying about Liverpool FC and the likes. But it's getting, for me, the thing is to get people into the theatre first and foremost. So, I mean, if I wrote something like a building site thing or something that is universal, you're thinking about, you know, are they going to come in? I want them to come in first, and then we'll maybe do something like that. But the first thing is to get people used to going to the theatre and getting out.
Do you know what? I've been talking. I need to get to your favourite book, which is Wise Guy by Nicholas Bileggi. That is the book. We mentioned the film earlier, Goodfellas. That this is the book that Goodfellas was based on. And I guess it comes back to your theory about the best stories come from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, well...
Even if the horse's head's been cut off.
Yeah, that guy who wrote that book, Nicholas Bileggi, I mean, it was told a story by a gangster called Henry Hill, who I think turned state witness, so I think the mafia's got a price on his head and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he came to Liverpool and
did talk
about it.
He did
talk
at Everton, didn't he, a couple of years ago?
Yeah. And a lot of people were saying, I'm not going to see him, he's a police informer, and I heard all those stories, but the fact of it is nobody can tell a story like him. And the minute I picked that book up, Wise Guys, I just read it so quickly. It's just like a roller coaster. He's just up, down, up, down, up, down. And then he ends up in a whole load of grief. And I think all of those kind of stories where somebody's got nothing from poverty and wants something. I mean, you're living in a city like New York, and if you live in poverty, you're right across the road from people with untold riches. Mm. So for him to want that as a kid and to look across the street and think, I'm having some of that, it's bound to be a big story. And I think there's a lot of those stories, a lot of them, in Liverpool, because it was a big docks, a big port, and a lot of people went out and foraged and went to, you know, to Australia, New Zealand, America, and did well for themselves, and those stories came back. So
Could you write a gangster? I mean, we know you like gangster stories, because you picked Carlito's Way as your best film, and this Wise Guy by Nicholas Bileggi as your favourite book. Mm. Could you write a gangster story about Liverpool where the gangsters are seen affectionately? Because it seems to me that we're willing to treat American gangsters affectionately, but in this day and age, the gloss has come off the homegrown gangster a little bit.
Well, I pitched one at the Everyman and Playhouse about 4 or 5 months ago that I'd like to write, and they haven't been back to me since. So, no, I definitely think we could do that, because, I mean, we've got all them people that they've got in New York. Just like you say, it's glamorised over there, and because it's foreign, we tend to gloss over and romanticise it. But all that stuff's here in our own doorstep. It's in cities like Manchester, Birmingham, Liverpool, Leeds. We need to be writing about our own, but we need to be sort of getting the funding to be putting it on and making good movies, because, to face it, most of the American movies that do come out, it's one in every so often that you get a good one. Mm. So I'm sure we could make them better than anybody, but usually it's a Cockney movie, isn't it? It's a London movie, yeah. And it's got to be like this typical Cockney gangster. You think that there was no other gangsters in any other city, so...
Yeah, yeah, and they're all chirpy, although I think occasionally, I mean, obviously the master at the moment of the Cockney gangster is old Guy Ritchie. He'd let a scouser in occasionally, but only for the sort of comedy, northern, doofus role. So, yeah, we could do a homegrown one. Well, I look forward to seeing that, because I think that... We've got to see some more plays and books and films coming out of you yet, Nicky. And also we have to see two more pieces of music coming out of you. And they're coming up very shortly on Tilly Talk 105.9. It's Van Morrison and the Lars. But first, well, stay where you are for a couple of minutes.
This is Take 5, City Talk 105.9.
Yes, indeed, this is Take 5 on City Talk 105.9 with me, Will Batchelor, and my studio guest for this hour, who is Nicky Ault. And we've been talking so much, because we're both passionate about this, Nicky, that I'm behind on your song. So I'm just going to say to you, your next one is Van Morrison, Into the Mystic. In a nutshell, why have you gone for this one?
One of the finest songs I've ever heard. The actual feeling that he gives on the record, I don't know how he does it, but he seems to portray like a dockside, and you can hear ferries in the background. And if they're ever going to play, it's a bit of a cliche, if they're going to play anything at my funeral, that's that song. It's just got such a fantastic aura around the song. And when I first heard it, it blew me away. I just thought, how can somebody make a song sound that good?
I'm going to ruin it for you now. You probably won't want it at your funeral after this. It was used as Jim and Michelle's wedding dance in American Wedding, which was one of the many, many sequels to American Pie. So it hasn't ruined it for you. In the meantime, it's still a cracking song, and it is coming up now on City Talk 105.9. It is, of course, Van Morrison and Into the Mystic. Van Morrison, Into the Mystic, and this is, of course, Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, and Nicky Ault, who's been my studio guest for the last hour, going through the five records he would rescue from his house were, God forbid, it to set on fire. And those records so far have been Saturday's Kids by The Jam, Something by The Beatles, Lay Lady Lay by Bob Dylan, and Into the Mystic, you just heard it, by Van Morrison. You've got one more, Nicky, and I'm pleased to say that A, it's a belter, and B, it's a short one, because I've enjoyed talking to you so much. We've kind gone over a little bit here. I know the one message you need to get out to people so you can actually walk across town without being mobbed is that One Night in Istanbul is coming back.
Yeah. No, a lot of people just keep asking me when's it coming back, and it will be coming back very soon to the Empire and just over the moon. And, you know, thank all the Liverpool people for backing us up in such a strong way, because we did take a big chance giving a lot of young actors the big debut at the Empire, but they carried it off, and I think the Liverpool audience pulled them all through as well. We had new actors like Tony Caveney, Darren Farley, Anthony Godfrey. These are all people who've never acted before, and people saying, oh, you're mad taking them to the Empire. But they came through with flying colours, and everybody is saying to us now on the streets, good that you give them young people a chance, and these people now are going to go on to bright futures because they're fantastically talented. So it's coming back on the Empire very, very soon.
It's coming back on, so will you leave him alone and let him walk across town? He's got business to do, he's got Adidas trainers to buy, he's got books to write. Nicky Ault's a busy man, so don't worry, he's coming back around October, you reckon?
Yeah, no, listen, it's lovely when people pull you up, because when they pull you up, they tell you it's good. No, it drives you on to write more, so it's great when Liverpool people pull you up and say, no, listen, I really, really enjoy it. That's the best thing that happens.
Your last song, as if I need to even ask you why, is There She Goes by the Lars. Why have you gone for this one, Nicky?
Well, I probably would have went for Feeling off the album, but I thought, well, maybe Radio City haven't got the album in, so I went for the obvious single. But the Lars are a fantastic band, and I think they still influence a lot of people just from the one album that they brought out.
It's a cracking tune. I wish they'd done more, but this was, in some ways, enough. City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. And this has been Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, and my studio guest, Nicky Ault, author and writer extraordinaire. Thanks to you, Nicky. It's been a fantastic hour, and we're going to catch up with you again very soon.
Yeah, really nice to come in, Will. Really enjoyed myself, so thanks for that. Great stuff.